Hey everyone, welcome to a kind of perennial holiday classic for some reason. I really don't know why. It has very little to do with Christmas other than, I guess, candy? Whatever. It was always on in the holiday season when I grew up, and it's a weird movie, so enjoy. Anyway, quick note about this episode. For some reason, the end of it didn't record properly. Don't know why. These things happen sometimes. So just assume everyone liked it except for Daniel. It's kind of fair. One last note. Obviously, there was no hint because of the end of the episode. Got cut off. So I guess I'll give you your hint now. This perennial holiday classic is always argued whether or not it counts as a Christmas movie. There you go. The day this drops, I am performing with Cineprov. Yes, I'll actually be in this one. In a little Mexican Christmas movie called Santa versus the Devil. Yeah. So if you can make it out to the plaza, you should. I'll be funny? Question mark, I guess? Also, at the end of the month, on the 20th, I believe. Let me check. You think I'd prepare, but I won't. The 21st is the Thursday. We will be doing Defending... Ruining Your Childhood, which is the Cineprov version. Well, we'll be doing some of the Rankin and Bass shorts, including Santa Claus is Coming to Town and Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, but those are possible to change. At the moment, I don't believe they've been set. So, without further ado, please enjoy Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
Make a wish. Count to three.
Come with me, and you'll be in a world of pure imagination. Take a look.
We need to tape a promo, guys. If you had to encapsulate the round table in one catchphrasey kind of way, what would you say?
Rampant Dickory? Or Donkulous?
We'll begin.
Let's not go with Shrek. The first one was. The second one was.
In the
great.
World of my creation.
Guys, promo. Stay on topic here. Stay on topic.
Oh, no, I'm going in! Stay on topic. I'm sorry.
Stay on topic.
I can't see it. It's up to you, Red Five.
Oh, God.
Where's the promo?
So, promo!
If you want to
the Round Table.
Paradise.
Brought to you by Revolution SF.
Simply look around.
Tough love
and
for sci-fi. Available at RevolutionSF.com and iTunes.
Want to change the world? There's nothing to it.
Welcome to My Open Adventure Childhood. This week we watched Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. I was afraid I was going to get it wrong. I think I got it right. I guess the movie that taught me, well, lied to me about what it's like to work in a factory. I'm Nick Hoffman, editor-in-chief of Doletter and host of My Open Adventure Childhood. And on panel we have...
Jeremy.
And...
Hello, this is Daniel, and I want an Oompa Loompa now.
So, this is December, or something like that. And we were going to do holiday movies, but for some reason, TBS always shows this around Christmas, so I thought this would be kind of a fun holiday movie.
Really? They're showing this around Christmas these days?
Yeah, kind of. It's just around, or ABC Family is, or whatever. I mean,
candy, Halloween?
Yeah. So. Whatever. This movie's weird. I've seen it a lot, and I always forget about the first half of this movie, other than the fact that Charlie is poor, and his parents live in... Actually, there is no dad in this one. It's his mom and four grandparents, and they live in crippling poverty.
The grandparents have to share the same bed. It's atrocious.
Also, something I noticed this time, which I didn't notice before, is all the parents' names are parallel, right? So there's Joe and Josephine, there's George and Georgina, and I believe Baruch Assault's parents are Henry and Henrietta.
I think you're right.
Which I thought was really very Roald Dahl. But we should kind of get into this. This is, of course, the classic. I'm sure you've all seen this on, so we can go quickly through the plot. But Daniel, do me the favor.
Five golden tickets. People who find them get into a factory, and Charlie Bucket wants a ticket, and they go in, and the factory's full of whimsy and wonder, and this crazy man quoting Oscar Wilde.
That was almost something. Charlie Bucket is very, 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 very poor. And he has a bike route a newspaper route, rather. Mm-hmm. I changed the pronunciation
Remember
of that
newspapers,
word.
Newspapers, kids?
Yeah.
Remember when children would be the ones delivering them?
Well, Newsies came out at one point, so you might remember that.
I almost was Newsies what killed the newspaper industry?
It should be.
Yeah.
They used to be boxers. That was something.
Mm. Oh, yeah. No, Newsies used to be vicious.
Well, and so Charlie Bucket is this poor little toe-headed boy, this little Moppet, mm-hmm. who grows up in incredible poverty in this working-class town. So
that's never identified. It's like some sort of German town that's located in Oklahoma.
And like you said, his mom is a washerwoman while the four grandparents have been in bed for apparently 2 decades.
Yeah.
Since the war.
Two of them don't even get any lines. I'm kind of wondering if they're even alive. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we have some dead grandparents here. Now,
poke him with the stick, Georgina. He hasn't moved since Wednesday.
There's a chamber pot under the bed, too, which is gross. It's true. I'm not making this up. We don't see... This is also just a room. This is not a room with rooms off of it. This is just, like, a room. This is really creepy.
But it's not the room. That would have made it more interesting.
Oh, hey, Charlie. How was your sex life? That's all I got. All
right.
That movie's out now. Isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
The Disaster?
Oh, it's coming out. It probably might be out by the time this gets released.
Ugh, gross. Anyway, so the Wonka is a magical mystery man showing that capitalism doesn't work in England.
Well, he's basically Howard Hughes. He just lives inside of his factory and probably pees in jars.
We'll get to that. That's for sure. But one way or another, what happens in this is we get reminded time and again that not only is Charlie poor, but there's this incredible factory in town where there's this chance to be rich, I guess.
It's kind of weird because it's like... it used to be, I think, I don't know if they mentioned it in the movie, but didn't Joe, Grandpa Joe, used to work at the factory?
That is in the book, and that's in the Tim Burton version.
Ah.
And I know this because, A, I watched them both back to back, and that's a weird 3.5 hours to spend. But second, this world has no hope for literally anyone.
Yeah, it is.
So it's a documentary?
Yeah. And Margaret Thatcher hadn't even come around yet. I can't imagine what I guess that's the Tim Burton version. The crippling poverty of working class Britain.
Well, that's strange, though, because we never really see any of the other people in the town except for the kids and the angry school teacher who's like a Monty Python character, and then the candy shop owner, and that's about it. We never get a sense of who else is in this town.
Well, and that teacher, that incredible teacher who is...
You could tell Roald Dahl wrote that for himself, but then they decided no.
Well, okay, so this is a musical, which we can kind of get through, but we'll talk about the difference between the regular kids and Charlie. The opening scene, other than a kind of glamour shot of a BBC-style documentary on the making of candy...
Yes.
...is a person who I thought was Dick Van Dyke, but is not Dick Van Dyke, singing The Candyman.
Now, I thought that was Anthony Newley, the guy who wrote all the songs, but it's not. It's somebody named Aubrey Woods, I think.
I'm sure he's someone that people recognize because they spend a lot of time on someone who has no character.
Yeah.
But he sings The Candyman Can, and it's kind of this beautiful scene where he's literally throwing fistfuls of candy at children while Charlie is staring in the window starving to death.
Yep.
Have you got a halfpenny, sir?
And frankly, it's the time you realize the most that these kids are like that Charlie is poor for no reason, because at one point he finds a pound sterling in like the gutter and buys a candy bar, and it's the only time we see the candy guy taking money is from this poor kid who can't afford anything.
Well, after
throwing candy at the rich
kid. After clearing his throat twice, being like, deadbeat, pay me.
Yes. it's actually a shockingly aggressive scene.
Yeah.
Halfway through this musical number, we get this kind of a view of Charlie's life.
Now, why does the Candyman musical number exist? It doesn't really forward much of anything.
It does not.
This movie is a tight 101 minutes. It's very short.
Yeah.
There's 3 songs you could cut out. This song I find charming, at least. The one, like, Cheer Up Charlie... is nothing but depressing. It's just a sad child walking down the street while his mother's talking about, I wish we weren't poor.
Yeah.
I mean, it's something.
So we have this teacher. After being kind of introduced to how poor Charlie is and how he has a paper route where he gets loose change for payment.
And it's enough to buy a loaf of bread that looks like a banquet, in the words of Uncle Joe.
Because all they eat is watered cabbage.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I'm fed up with cabbage water. Jesus.
Yeah.
Jesus, this movie.
And the teacher is doing a chemistry experiment where he says, Charlie, help pour these chemicals in equal proportion. Otherwise, it could kill us all.
Oh, yeah. And then they just start pouring all three at the same time with no measurement whatsoever.
And smoke starts appearing. Everyone's coughing. And then there's a ruckus in the hallway. And
a ruckus? What's all this now?
And this little and the kid goes,
it's Mr. Wonka, sir. Mr. Wonka has decided he will open his factory up to five children's.
And the teacher decides to cancel class because of this, because that's what you would do. Oh,
well, people go crazy over this, though. I mean, what, the queen's bidding on that bag of that box of Wonka bars or something?
I wrote that down, too.
Oh, your majesty.
Yeah, we can't say anything about how ridiculous this is, considering the most recent Szechuan sauce episode.
Oh, you know what? Yeah, that was last weekend.
So for those of you who've forgotten this, which you should, it's a very depressing moment in our history. Rick and Morty made a joke on the April Fool's Day episode of their show that he was having flashbacks, if only to remind him of 1998 when Mulan came out and Szechuan sauce. When McDonald's decided to put this out, they released on average 20 packets per location, and there was only a handful of locations per metropoli.
Well, one of them was actually over in close to Buckhead, but I didn't even try because, frankly, I had better things to do with my life.
For a crappy sauce, a woman traded a car. She got a car for a packet of Szechuan sauce. Jeez. And it turned into a disaster. So you're right. People are idiots.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, those are some of the best scenes in this movie, though. It's like that woman's husband gets kidnapped and the ransom is her box of Wonka bars and she's not giving it up.
Right. But regardless, so the MacGuffin for the first half are there are five golden tickets and everyone in the world's trying to get the tickets. And we get this montage of characters. We have...
Well, it goes Augustus Gloop in the Germany. The fat German. And then there's Violet, who is the gum chewer.
Who's the American.
Yes. Well, there's two Americans. There's Violet.
And Mike TV.
Mike TV, who looks and sounds like Jay Leno as a child.
I will say I like the Tim Burton version better of Violet Beauregard because she was from the Atlanta area and looked like every other suburbanite. It was actually spectacular.
Oh, yeah. And she was like super competitive or something.
She was. And it reminded me of people I went to high school with. So that's okay.
Well, and then there's Veruca, who is that spoiled brat whose dad runs the peanut factory.
And then there's a fifth one that
is Martin Borman.
Yes. There's a fifth one that shows up in Peru, apparently, but it turns out to be a fraud, which gives us the most depressing line in the movie, which is the grandparents and the mother who are watching TV while Charlie's upstairs in bed. And they go, well, that's it. Mm-hmm. And they go, should we tell Charlie? He goes, no, let him sleep. He'll find out soon enough. A boy's got to have hope.
Oh, yeah. And that kid is just like, sobbing.
And he's crying. Like, this is literally the saddest child that he thought he might. And the next scene is literally the teacher again, where they're learning fractions.
Why are they dividing to learn percentages by 1,000?
Because it's a round number. It could be 100. It doesn't matter.
It should be 100. Plus, he can't divide 2 by 1,000 and turn that into
percent.
They're
learning math. That's better than what we got today.
Okay.
Well, I guess if it's Britain, it's technically they're learning maths.
Maths, yes.
But all the kids are talking about how they opened hundreds and hundreds of Wonka bars. Mm-hmm. And Charlie only opened 2. And he goes, 200.
Divide 2?
2 by 1,000. The other joke they had, which is a very Roald Dahl joke, is, so obviously we've had some unpleasantness, so we're going to start with a lesson. I've decided to move all the tests from Friday to Monday. So we'll have the exams before you've learned the material. And that's it. And then you're learning fractions. I thought that was funny.
Yeah.
What is I looking at?
Speaking of which, I'll just explain that other thing I said. At one point in time, they're like saying, when they supposedly find that fifth tick in Peru, here's the most recent picture of this guy, and it's a photo of Martin Bormann from 1934, because apparently a lot of people thought he had fled to South America after the war. He didn't. He had died. But anyway, that was just... gave me a weird question. It's like, so wait, Martin Bormann's alive and is a casino magnate in South America and nobody's noticed?
Indeed, Beaker. But yeah, so they find out that this last one's... Oh, and when they announce that the last candy bar has been found, I think Charlie's line is, I bet you the golden ticket makes the candy bitter.
Oh, yeah. That's
I mean, the kid has so little to live for. So other than this being a suicide case...
You know, 30 years afterwards, this kid founded Panic at the Disco.
Yeah. He was in Fall Out Boy. But he wasn't the lead singer. He was the drummer, so he couldn't even get women.
Oh, dude.
Oh, come on. A drummer joke is fair.
It would be more appropriate if you were a bassist.
Oh, dude.
So,
Roger Waters literally married royalty. I'm just going to leave that out there.
But he's also Roger Waters, man. John Henley did okay, too, but I hate the fucking Eagles, man.
Paul McCartney did just fine.
He technically was the best drummer in the Beatles, but he was not wrong. The drummer. Oh, God.
He was the bassist, though.
He was. So it just reminded me, because we're making these jokes, the last podcast did a series on Robert Picton, and they apparently, who's a serial killer, he killed 49 prostitutes, but he had a farm, and he was a pig guy, like they had a pig farm, and apparently they had a place called the Pig Palace, which was like a huge dive bar, you know?
Yeah.
And apparently Nickelback played there in the early 90s, and now it's associated with a serial killer.
So by extension, Nickelback is guilty of killing 49 prostitutes?
Well, I just like the idea of someone like Charlie Bucket's like, my hopes are finally looking up, and his first gig is he gets busted by the cops by saying... at this point, we can kind of cut ahead to the Chocolate Factory.
Yeah, that was 45 minutes, by the way, of kind of dumb jokes when they introduced the kids. Oh, and Slugworth. Should we mention Slugworth?
Okay, so Slugworth is a character out of J.K. Rowling.
Yeah.
I mean, whatever. He's your stereotypically generic evil character.
He has a scar on his face.
I know it. Yes. Okay. I know where the scars are from, even. It's a thing, and it's a trope, but during World War II, the Germans cut holes in their fencing masks so you would get scars up the cheek. And I know this because my grandfather was stationed there after the war, and so the Germans would still do that. So you'd have, like, when you were doing fencing, you'd have a little hole in the mask so you'd get these scars up the cheek. So it was a German trait, and it was even the actor was even a guy named Gunther. So he's supposed to be a bad dude. He is terrifying. Even when Shelley finds the tickets, random adults just grab at him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is a world where people just touch kids, and I'm kind of not okay with it. In fact, Gene Wilder starts rubbing Mike TV's head and then plucks a hair out of his scalp. It's all creepy, guys.
Yeah. The whole thing with Slugworth is he's trying to get the kids to steal something from the factory so he can copy it before he gets officially released.
Yeah.
And somehow he knows exactly where all the kids are and the golden tickets are.
Yes. So this is something I brought up with Candace, my wife.
My wife.
That just happened.
It did.
God, it's like 2004 all over again. So he's there. Does this mean that Willy Wonka picks these kids in advance?
I think so.
Right?
Yeah.
Because, like, in the Tim Burton version, that's kind of alluded to. They make this reference time and time again that, like, there's only 8 seats on the boat. Mm-hmm. Because by that point, there's only 8 kids, or there's 4 kids and 4 adults left.
Right.
And they point that out in the Tim Burton version, but they don't really hear.
That was one thing I didn't like about the remake, was because it was way too obvious about what was happening. The original is a lot more ambiguous about it.
Yeah, the newer one is more self-aware. Although they make it clear that the kids don't die at the end, which this one does not bother to.
No.
They could not bother.
Well, it's a lot more fun to imagine that they did. Well, I remember when they were first trying to push that remake through in, like, the late 90s, and one of the people who was, like, annoying the producers to be Willy Wonka was Marilyn Manson. like to the point where I think they eventually said, if Marilyn calls, tell him we're not here. But he kept saying that his whole thing was that the factory is hell and Wonka is Satan and the kids are all being punished for their sins.
That would have been better than what we got.
In the remake, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, the remake is just pale. It has no soul to it. Because this one, we should get into this. When Wonka shows up, right, it's a very Gene Wilder kind of thing. Like, he walks out with his cane. The cane gets stuck, and so he does a little tumble and is ta-da. Mm-hmm. I mean, Tim Burton's is kind of like the beginning of Shrek when they show up in town.
Yeah.
There's like that little animatronic, it's a small world thing, and Johnny Depp is just kind of there. That's already the difference. One is a performer, one isn't. Willy Wonka is... God, it's such a Tim Burton thing, right? Like, the non-main character is the most interesting part of the movie.
I mean, Gene Wilder is so much better in pretty much everything that he was ever in. But this performance in particular, it's like Daniel Day-Lewis couldn't be that good.
Daniel Day-Lewis would have been the most intense Willy Wonka. You know, children, there's something wrong with all of you.
Well, you're forgetting he put on a goofier voice than that.
Who, Daniel Day-Lewis?
Yeah.
That's true. Willy Wonka, like, there's all this weirdness at the very beginning, like the contract that gets ever smaller, the room that turns into another room where the door they came in is the door they leave, and then they enter the candy room.
Yep.
And that's where we get the song Pure Imagination. And this is where the movie is sold to me. And it's funny because this is generally the part where I think the movie begins. But like I said, we're almost an hour in at this point. But it's this... It's interesting because there are establishing shots of this room that remind us we're actually in a factory. You can see the overhead hanging lights. You can see the high ceilings, the concrete walls, everything that makes it a factory.
They pan on the smokestacks with the logo on the side early in the movie.
And so even when they're in this candy room, you're reminded it's a factory. But it's a world that they create really very well. And so you have their chocolate waterfall, the buttercups, the kind of balls of fudge. It's pretty.
Yeah.
And it makes it better than the CGI in the remake because they really did explode a child with juice.
Well, I like how they originally did it in the movie because they never showed the kids like what anything was going to look like until the cameras were rolling. So they didn't see that room until it was time to film. So their reactions were genuine.
And that worked so well that they were like, let's do that again for the boat scene.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, my God. Gene Wilder has seen some shit. Like, because he's not blinking. He's just, is it raining? Is it... And the kids are losing it, and they should be, because it's horrifying.
Wasn't there a decapitated chicken at one point? Was that
better? They decapitate the chicken.
Yes.
There's a meat cleaver, and they cut the head off the chicken.
That's right.
So we lose Augustus Gloop because the fat German kid falls into the chocolate. He gets sucked up into a tube, and, you know, like a champagne cork, the pressure builds up behind him, and he shoots through the ceiling, and we get our first Oompa Loompa song.
The Oompa Loompa songs.
I want to say they were partially directed by, like, the guy who did the Dr. No panel, because all of a sudden words will flash on the screen, there'll be subtitles, there'll be fat guys dancing. It's something.
Yeah.
And they just tell the German woman to her face that your kid is a fat glutton and he's probably going to die. That just tickles me to no end. What do you get when your child is fat? And anyway...
I just love how callous some Willy Wonka was after all those things. Like, there's that Oompa Loompa that whispers into his ear, and Willy Wonka's like, no, I won't hold you responsible.
Yeah. I mean, and when Augustus Gloop first falls in, she goes, do something. He goes, help someone. Police. Murder. I mean, but the thing is, the kids are wrong, man. He said, don't do the one thing that they do.
Yeah.
This is Roald Dahl yelling at kids on his lawn.
Oh, he was quite good at that, especially if the kids were Jewish.
Oh, that's funny and mean. All right. So from here, we get the boat ride where we get the really creepy kind of, as Mike TV calls it, this is psychedelic, which is something. And I didn't even say what year is this. This is actually pretty trippy for the time, right? Like, this is what,
it's 71? It's the early 70s, isn't it?
Yeah, this is 71, so this is something. Anyway.
Well, they knew half the audience was going to show up with blotter acid, so why not take advantage?
Hunter S. Thompson.
A double feature of this in 2001, good times.
Oh, boy.
Oh, man. That's something.
There were paramedics stationed outside the theater.
It's like one of those slasher movies from the 60s where, like, we will sell you insurance because...
Yeah, that's right.
In case you die of fear. So after seeing insects being eaten by lizards and grasshoppers and weird reptilii...
And Slugworth.
And Slugworth at one point. We mentioned that Uncle Grandpa Joe's an asshole, right? Because he just springs out of bed and he's totally fine after about 4 seconds.
Oh, yeah.
They get to the invention room. The invention room is where we lose Violet Beauregard.
Yeah, Vyra. Well, she chews that experimental gum that turns her into a blueberry.
This is where we get the everlasting gobstoppers, the thing that Willy Wonka is trying to hide from Slugworth because Slugworth wants an everlasting gobstopper.
Now, those look weird in this movie. They're like, what do they look like? They look kind of like dodecahedrons or something, and they got all these spikes on them.
When we were kids, there were these little rubbery toys that had little knobs sticking out of it, so when you threw it, they would bounce in weird directions.
Yes.
That's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
It's kind of... They're little knobs sticking out of it, and it's supposed to be like... Well, it's a jawbreaker that never sucks down. So for... Willy Wonka apparently has this mission to solve... poverty, like, and so he's making candy for poor kids, as he puts it, so that the candy never goes away.
I will replace poverty with diabetes.
Yeah. And then ultimately he will, they really hit the nail on the head in the Tim Burton one, but he goes, cooking is a pain and we will get rid of all kitchens with this gum that fills you up like real food. So there's this giant machine with like bees in it. And
I am
like,
not making the joke I just thought of.
That's good. I'm proud of your restraint. It's unusual.
I'm using restraint right now.
All right. So in the end, Violet Beauregard, the gum chewer, steals some gum.
Now, why is chewing gum so bad exactly in this case?
I think it's a stab at Americans. I mean, honestly, because Europeans don't really chew gum. Mm. And so it's a distinctly kind of cowboy trait that, you know, it does scream old person who's like, you shouldn't be chewing your gum. But it's also that she's doing it, you know, like an annoying kid with, you know, too much like big league chew in her mouth.
Oh, yeah.
The entire movie. But the whole gag is that it's a 3-course meal. It's soup. It's a baked potato with roast beef. And then it's a blueberry pie.
Yeah.
And in typical Gene Wilder on lewds kind of way, he goes, oh, you're wrong around the blueberry pie. Mm-hmm. And she starts to inflate like a blueberry.
Like Mr. Creosote.
In an actually quite an impressive practical effect.
Yeah, that looked good.
Best I can tell, it's the little girl in an inflatable suit.
Oh, yeah.
With her face painted blue. You're turning violet, violet, said a very put-upon father.
She has a bright future ahead of her as a Vegas performer.
In the Tim Burton one, the joke is when they squeeze the juice out of her, she's suddenly very flexible. And as a competitive person, she's just doing flips down the stairs.
I remember that, yeah.
She looks better than Veruca. Veruca is the most unpleasant person that has ever been put on film.
Yeah.
Quite possibly.
I fast-forwarded through her musical number.
I Want It Now?
Yeah, that was just... It's like, I've had enough.
Well, they could probably keep I Want It Now for the porn parody.
Ooh. See, what the hell is this? I show restraint and then Jeremy pipes in with that? What the hell?
I thought it was funny. So, from here, other than cold cream and hair cream, this is when, what's his name? This is when Grandpa Joe and Charlie sneak off, and they drink the fizzy lifting drink, which makes them float. But they get too close to the ceiling fan at the top and nearly get sliced to ribbons, but they start belching, and then they fall down. Which matters, because technically then Charlie violates his contract, which is something that...
Now, minors can't sign contracts, Wonka, and you know that.
I don't think he does. He treats these kids like adults the whole time. And not unlike this in the movie Seven. This is the movie Seven, by the way. You have Willy Wonka and Seven is a hell of a movie idea.
Oh, what's in the box, Mr. Wonka? What's in the box?
I'm impressed that he became Jimmy Stewart there. What's in the box? What's in the box, Mr. Wonka? Oh, geez.
Well, Mr. Wonka. You know what's in the box then, so long as we're going on that route?
The lazy eye.
That might be a stay tuned.
Yeah, yeah. It should be.
We also have to do Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. Mm. Those are connected because they were both in... one was in Universal Park, one was in MGM, but that's where it came from. Anyway, so what's next? The golden eggs, right? Like, we're already there.
Yeah, the factory's real nice pacing.
Yeah. So there are these geese that lay golden eggs. It's kind of like... They're essentially laying Kinder chocolate eggs, right? Wrapped in gold foil. And this is when Baruka decides that after wanting everything, this is the where she's going to draw the line. This is what I want. This is what I want. And her poor father, the put-upon, sweaty guy. I mean, in the Tim Burton version, he's not put-upon at all. He's just as spoiled as she is. He just doesn't care to raise his daughter. Mm-hmm. So he just buys her things so she shuts up.
Yeah.
Here, America. Yeah. Here, she
Is. So it's Tiffany then.
Yeah, pretty much.
All right. That was a Trump joke.
It was. And here, she is like the father is, the mother is lazy, and he is just like, oh God, please love me, family, pretty much. And he's sweaty and like balding, and he's just like wiping his kind of balding head the whole movie.
Oh, here's the connection. That's Roy Kinnear, Rory Kinnear's father from who was Bill Tanner in Skyfall and Spectre. So that's why they look so similar.
And this is all wrapped up.
Yep. Veruca is a future Bond girl. That's what's going on.
And so we have a joke here, which is that there's a scale. So when the goose lays the egg, there's a scale that could tell if it's a good egg or a bad egg. And the bad eggs go directly into the incinerator.
Mm-hmm.
And so at mid-musical number, she jumps up on the scale to try to grab one of the geese. And the scale rates her as a bad egg, and she falls directly.
Now, do you think this is a reference to the Egyptian afterlife where your heart had to be weighed, and if it was too heavy, then you went to hell?
I think it was Roald Dahl, and he thought it was a funny pun. I'm going to make it much simpler than that, because okay. I've seen Matilda directed by Danny DeVito, and that's the whole thing.
Yeah, pretty much.
Which, again, is another probably stay tuned. That's a really creepy... So, I found a YouTube channel called Binging with Babish, and he cooks things from TV and movies and things like that, and he did the chocolate cake from Matilda.
Oh,
God. And he even pricked his finger and put a drop of blood in it, so it had blood.
Better than the chocolate pie from the hell.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, there you go.
He did that SNL joke where it was like the 15-layer taco.
Oh,
shit. Wrapped in a pepperoni pizza and covered in flapjacks and then all deep fried. That was funny. He did the Luther from... anyway, we're fine.
The Luther's a real thing, though.
The Luther's a real thing, but yeah. He did the recipe from Boondocks.
Ah.
But yeah, he's done a lot of stuff. It's fun. But anyway, so... She dies. They all die. Everyone dies. And then we're left with Mike TV. Mike TV, they go into this clean room where Willy Wonka invents teleportation.
Mm-hmm.
Taking a large chocolate bar and using a laser, he shrinks it down into microscopic size.
Now, I do remember this from the remake, and it offended me, where they replaced the monolith from 2001 with a chocolate bar. It's like, really? You're going to do that? You haven't earned the right to do that.
Yeah. I do think it's making fun of how people think the original Willy Wonka is a classic, and they're saying, no, this is a classic. we're not ruining a classic. This is ruining a classic. That might be giving Tim Burton too much credit, but...
He has not cared, really, since 2003.
What year did...
Big Fish was his last, right?
Yeah, that was 2003.
That might be my favorite movie.
I did like Big Eyes, which came out in 2014, which is like, okay, here's $10 million and you don't get Johnny Depp. Go actually do something worthwhile. And it's like, all right. But other than that, he has just not cared.
I think Big Fish is a masterpiece. Although I do like his older movies.
Yeah, his older movies are great.
I rewatched Batman recently, and that's damn fine.
Ed Wood is amazing. Especially that scene where Ed Wood meets Orson Welles. It's one of the best things I've ever seen.
You know who's actually a better actress than I realized? Helena Bonham Carter, because when she's not in Johnny Depp movies, she's yeah. okay.
Well, she was in that version of Hamlet from the early 90s, right?
Well, I mean, she was also in Fight Club. That's the first time I saw her.
Oh, yeah, yeah, she was Marla.
But recently, she's done a decent amount of stuff. Her and Johnny Depp's description in IMDb is virtually the same. A widely talented actor or slash actress. But she's actually British, so in the yeah. remake, she can just be English, which is nice,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to Johnny Depp, who just doesn't try. Which he shouldn't. He's an alcoholic. Coming from someone who drinks a lot, he at one point was spending $30,000.
But do you drink to drown your sorrows?
Not usually. I drink because I didn't win that Academy Award, and yeah. people were thinking I was racist because I pretended to be a Cherokee. You know, it happens. Mm. He spends $30,000 a month in wine.
Well, when you're that rich, what else are you going to do?
Maybe he just Scrooge McDuck dives into it.
Yeah, I would.
Time for my wine bath. Yeah. I love that so much. Anyway, so end of the process. Mike TV is like, wow, you can put yourself in a TV. My last name dictates what's about to happen. So yes. he goes into the TV, ends up small, and they have to stretch him out in the taffy pole.
Oh, that was the worst effect of this entire movie, where it's that kid facing his green screened mother.
Yeah,
that was
rear projected. That's something yeah. that should not have been on Blu-ray. That since I own it, I can very clearly see.
Yeah.
But, so with that, this is the second meme that we get. The first one, of course, is when he's just kind of, Gene Wilder's holding his face.
Oh, sarcastic Wonka.
Yeah.
Sarcastic Wonka.
But then we get the second one, which is the contract, where they're like, well, the exit's over there. Thanks for coming. And then he goes off to the office. And
everything's cut in half, and just it looks weird for the sake of looking weird.
Yeah, and you know, Wonka goes, "You lose. You drank the fizzy lifting drink. You're not supposed to. You ruined my ceiling, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera." Mm-hmm. And you lose. You don't win the contract.
That is exactly what I hope gets recited to Trump as he's being let out. You violated your oath of office, so you get nothing. You lose. Good day, sir.
But yeah. Yeah, good day, sir, is his final line. Mm.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, the chocolate room.
Myopia Defender Childhood is a member of the ESO Network and produced by Dude Letter Podcasting. It is hosted by Nick Hoffman. It is edited by Nick Hoffman and Candace Burns. The theme song is Caroline by the Serenaders, and their music is available on Amazon. Please rate and review us on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcast. And tune in next week when we put another little piece of your past on trial. Thanks.
Hold your breath. Make a wish. Count to three.
Come with me, and you'll be in a world of pure imagination. Take a look, and you'll see into your imagination.